Show me the money.
$1 billion.
You got a 90s
No,
movie, Natalie, that you want to reference?
as if.
This is All Things Education, a podcast where three-decade teachers discuss what they know.
The good, the not so good, and the continuous opportunity for high-quality education in Texas.
Join us for a smart conversation as we dig deep into the issues that affect us all in and around our great state.
And here are those three magnificent instructors now. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to All Things Education. My name is Lance. I am a high school math teacher up here in the great metroplex of Dallas-Fort Worth. And here I am with my two co-hosts.
Hi, everyone. I'm Matthew, an electives teacher at a middle school in Austin, Texas.
Hey, everybody. I'm Natalie, a campus leader based in San Antonio, Texas. How's it going?
Doing
Great. How are you
wonderful.
guys?
It's so wonderful to see you both. It's spring. I think we've officially passed the groundhog shadow and taken a turn into April showers. By the time y'all are listening to this, we're probably on the tail end of spring break, or maybe it will even be a distant memory. So we're in that home stretch of school. And how are y'all doing? How was your break? How's school going? And Natalie, why don't you share first?
Well, at the time that we're recording this is the very start of my spring break. So I have a whole week of time to look forward to, which is such a luxury, as you both know, I'm sure. Matthew, sorry to rub it in. I know yours doesn't start till next
one week
week.
Away. 1 week away.
Yeah. But when we're going back and you're starting your break, we'll be feeling
right.
Good.
Exactly.
I wish I was still off. No, but I'm looking forward to the opportunity to just get some rest, much needed rest,
well
take
deserved.
Care of some things around my house and hopefully hang out with some friends, maybe catch some live music here and there if I'm lucky through the week.
You're saying teachers have friends outside of school?
I mean, I have a few friends outside of you guys.
Yeah.
So yeah, I hope I'll get to meet up with some of them. What's going on in your world, Matthew?
Yeah, so like you alluded to, I still have one more week, 4 days technically, of school to go, and then I'm off for a week, and really, really, really looking forward to it this year. For those who are not educators, the second semester is always jam packed. It goes by really fast, but there is a ton of work to do for educators. And so to have this break right before STAR testing begins to ramp up, right before those end of the year projects begin to sort of take fruition, we get a little time to just breathe. And it's beautiful in Texas this time of year. So it's, you know, really looking forward to it for sure. What about you, Lance?
Yeah, no, and I bet down in Austin you'll be spending some time outside. I hope that it's absolutely beautiful for you. It's been rainy up here in the Metroplex going into our break. But yeah, again, like when y'all are listening to this, it's going to be quarter two of 2025, if our listeners can even believe that. We're steamrolling into this home stretch, as Matthew mentioned. We've entered the last lap and we see the flag on the horizon, right? And I can't speak for y'all, but I'm in pole position right now. So in our school, it's going to mean AP testing. It's going to mean final exams. It's going to mean prom. And then before you know it, you'll blink and the kids are going to be out of school celebrating their summer break. And maybe we won't be complimenting the weather as much at that point. I don't know how it's going to be this year.
For sure.
But yeah, Matthew, you've already talked a little bit about what school looks like for you in the home stretch of, you know, the school year. Natalie, what is it like at your school as summer is on the horizon, believe it or not?
I mean, this last stretch after spring break is literally the fastest, busiest chunk of the school year, I think, for me anyway, in my role, because there's a lot of testing. And so I'm still tasked with coordinating a lot of that. And there's quick turnaround from one test to the next. So like all of April is heavy STAR testing. Then we have in May, our high school credit exams. Also, our calendar has shifted the last couple of years, so we are losing another week of summer. And
wow.
With that, comes a little bit of anxiety as well, moving into this latter part of the legislative session and what that's going to mean for our calendars, for our classrooms, for our master schedules as we go into the summer months and start preparing for next school year. So as soon as we've stopped thinking about the current school year, we are already planning and preparing for the next. So there's a lot to fill in those calendar days for sure.
It is definitely a year-long cycle, that is for sure, especially for a school leader like you. I'm guessing the summer break is not as robust as it might be for the young ones.
That is correct.
Well, speaking of Austin, Matthew, your home base, there's quite a lot going down in the capital city right now, as our listeners are probably already aware of. We've been working on keeping y'all informed through our legislative updates, and we're now multiple months into a legislative session, as the legislators are talking and meeting. And of course, public schools are on everybody's radar. We're definitely looking at some bills being passed, or at least some bills being argued, that create this voucher program or education savings account, potentially with teacher raises as part of the mix, or even a raising of the school allotment, which is the amount of money schools receive per student enrolled per year. A lot of things still up in the air, but I think that unlike 2 years ago, we might actually see some of those balls settle here as 2025 rolls along. Have y'all been following the legislative session from your end?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's definitely heating up. The ESA bill was passed in the Senate, and now it's moving on to the House. And I think we'll talk a little bit about that pretty shortly.
Definitely.
There seems to be a significant, well, potentially a significant boost in teacher pay and money allotted to teacher training programs.
Right.
So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, and the governor has made it very clear that his top legislative priority in 2025, and honestly for many years now, has been these school vouchers that Matthew was just talking about. And we've recorded before, we've been on record about how these will affect students here in Texas. So we really wanted to come at this conversation for more of an approach of how it's going to impact the public education system here in Texas with the inevitability of them passing. We are all public servants in this state. Collectively, we have over 3 decades of experience in public schools. And so this is definitely going to affect us and very likely going to affect our listeners, students, and kids as well. Natalie, what would you like to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be determined. There's still a lot of the other things that were contingent upon Abbott's vouchers passing through the legislative session, such as teacher pay and raising the basic allotment and other measures about school funding in general that were basically on hold, held hostage even by the voucher factor. And so now that we're starting to see some movement on that, and we expect that it will pass, now we're also looking at what that means, not just for side-by-side comparison, vouchers versus per head basic allotment funding, but also the long range impact of those vouchers and the widely undiscussed bounce back that we expect to see when students who may qualify for a voucher attempt to use it. And if they're not able to fully exercise or take advantage of that voucher as it has been presented as it would be utilized, we expect to see some of those students coming back to public schools. And so then there's going to be a lot of accounting and other things to consider in terms of services that we provide.
Very well said. When we look at these voucher programs, it actually, when you look at percentages, it's not necessarily going to affect all that many students. Different projections have different estimates of what will happen. But as Natalie said, many of them are going to stay with us. And some of the latest numbers that I've seen have shown that still in 2025, something like 90 a little bit over 90% of students are enrolled in the public school system versus private or parochial or even homeschool or whatever other options they are in. We're talking 90% of students in Texas is millions upon millions of students. It is very likely going to be the system that is still affecting our families. And to be very frank with our listeners, we cannot continue to operate without critical funding, which is a big part of this session, as Matthew and Natalie have already been discussing. Unfortunately, the amount that the state pays us, or I should say funds is a better word there than pays. I'm not trying to quote Jerry Maguire here. Show me the money, right? The amount that we receive from the state has remained static since 2019. So going on 6 years now, let me point to you of a major world event that happened the year after the last time that the allotment for students was raised. I'm talking about the global pandemic and also record inflation that has occurred in the years since then. So 2019, the last time we saw a significant increase in funding for public schools. But if you go even a little bit further back, it's been a pretty stagnant number since as far back as 2012 or even 2010, depending on the metric you look at. And this is all despite our state having a budget surplus. So we need money, right? Let's just be really blunt with our listeners. And even as the inevitability of vouchers goes through the House and Senate and ends up on the governor's desk, we want to reassure our listeners of the services that we provide. Anything y'all want to add to that before we get into some of the arguments?
Yeah, just really quickly, I think for our listeners who may not be familiar with what vouchers or ESAs are, I quickly want to go over kind of like what this is, right? So an education savings account is a government-funded account that provides parents with public funds to pay for approved educational expenses for their children. So these accounts allow families to use money that would have been spent on their child's public education, most commonly for private school tuition. So essentially, and maybe oversimplifying this a little bit, this is public money, taxpayer money, that can go to families to be used for private schooling or homeschooling or some kind of alternative to the traditional public education. In Texas, they're looking to spend $1 billion on these ESAs, which would ultimately account for about roughly 100,000 students.
Great, Dr. Evil impression there, Matthew. Since we're getting all the 90s movies.
$1 billion.
You got a 90s movie, Natalie, that you want
Oh God, the first one that comes to mind is Clueless, as if.
to reference? May or may not be a comment about vouchers.
Right.
Anyways,
So
Matthew.
this is a highly controversial topic. I think from one side, the argument in favor of vouchers is that this essentially provides parents with more opportunity. On the other side of the spectrum, though, this is money that would potentially be siphoned from public schools. Keep in mind that public schools are funded based on student attendance. If student attendance goes down because students opt to use an ESA and send their child to a private school, that public school would essentially lose money because they lose that student. In other states that have been using or trying out these ESA or voucher programs, the majority of recipients of ESAs are, well, students who are already attending private schools. So there is concern about that.
Very well said. So let's kind of circle back to the public schools because we assume that our listeners are wanting the best for their students in really good faith. And obviously, we're all parents here. We want the best for our students. So we wanted to kind of address some of the concerns or some of the thoughts about the public schools with a couple of key points. The first being test scores, right? Well, of course, I want to take my student out of the public school and go to the down the road private school because look at the test scores, right? Look at this school's rating. this public school's rating in my neighborhood. Why would I want to take my student there? And this is based in reality, right? Test scores in Texas, specifically the STAR test, and there's other standardized tests out there, but that's kind of the big one. Test scores are the primary metric that we use to evaluate our schools. That is essentially, and this may seem overly simplistic, but it's essentially it, the rubric for the school ratings. And you can Google your school's rating. In fact, there's some research that shows that when families are moving in Texas or really anywhere, that's one of the first things they Google. How is my new neighborhood's public school? And they look at that rating, and that's the boogeyman, or maybe a cause for celebration, as the case may be, right? So test scores really do matter in the perception of public schools. That being said, there's a couple of counterarguments to that, which we just wanted to bring to our listeners. Number one, test scores do not necessarily predict long-term outcomes for students. A lot of it might be correlation rather than causation when it comes to the places where we are seeing the highest test scores. What else might be true about those regions? So that's one thing to keep in mind. Another is the inconsistency of implementation, because this might be news to our listeners, but private schools don't actually have to give the STAR test. It's optional. So this right. isn't an apples to apples comparison in all cases. If I take my student out of my wonderful public school, and we'll talk about what they do provide, because he's going to fail the STAR test, or at least that's my perception, he might not have to actually take the START test down the road at private school that's costing thousands of dollars. Also, there is a question mark. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but there's also a question mark as far as the scoring of these STAR tests. Very recently, here in Dallas, there was a situation where thousands of students' tests were misscored erroneously in the 2024 administration. And my superintendent actually challenged some of these scorings that had been done by some automation. And we saw something around 3,000 students' scores going up upon retesting by a human being. So Whoa. Just to kind of summarize the points here,
interesting.
It is the way that we evaluate our schools. It is not necessarily predictive of long-term outcomes. And honestly, can we even trust the system? So test scores as a boogeyman is not something that we choose to cite as a detractor for what is going on with our public schools. Has that been y'all's experience as well?
The test window is literally one snapshot of the school year. It does not reflect growth and progress through the course of a school year, which is something that in a previous episode with Kate Greer from the Commit Partnership talked about STAR redesign, which is also, as far as I know, still in talks as part of the legislative priorities. But even so, you make the point that private schools are not held to the same standard and expectation for any of those STAR tests. So it is not a fair comparison, but I think to your point about what we're doing in a public school and how much of that can be measured by strictly a STAR test performance data breakdown, I would agree with you wholeheartedly that there's so much more happening in our public schools that serve our students and their families and the communities at large that is not widely discussed. And so I'm glad that we'll have the opportunity to talk about that here.
Yeah, I 100% agree, Natalie. The public school is such an important entity of the community. It serves so many different roles and so many different people. I mean, just what, last Friday night and Saturday during the day and Saturday night, we had a huge amount of parents and kids and families show up to our school just to watch this amazing, amazing performance of Nemo the musical.
That done sounds by our so cool.
And it was awesome.
Can I come next time?
You're invited. Yeah, you're invited. It was great. And I mean, this is where you go to watch the football game, the soccer game, the baseball game.
The this math is competitions
you go for summer camps. I mean, this is such an integral, the public school is such an integral part of the community and a representation of the community. And especially in rural parts of Texas, this is kind of like the bedrock of the community. This is where people come together. This is AISD is the largest employer in the city. And so to, you know, narrow things down based on an arbitrary test score is just like so, what it's so wrong. But I'm a big hater on standardized testing in general. So you are hearing from, you know, a bias, but I'm also an educator who has dedicated, you know, their adult career to pursuing something that I believe is, you know, really noble and impactful and necessary. And I think like when it comes to sort of private schools, and I do think that there is value in private schools, and they are an alternative, I think you have to look at this from more of a holistical approach, in that public schools tend to be able to offer a lot more than the alternative for a myriad of reasons.
Back to the test scores as well. Let's talk. I'm just going to make one comment here. They cost a fortune, right? The Texas spends over $1 billion a year just on its standardized testing apparatus. And this isn't necessarily a get rid of standardized tests podcast, but it's just not the boogeyman that we think that it is when we're denigrating public schools, right, for their rating. Point number two that I really wanted to talk about, and public education as a mandate dates back way, 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 way before we came around, right? Almost back to before this country even existed in this part of the world. And something that we're seeing as a recent phenomenon is this belief that the schools are the hotbeds for political or ideological indoctrination, right? This is we're the centerpiece of the culture war sometimes. And so we just wanted to address this as our boogeyman number two, when people are denigrating the public schools because they're teaching our kids X, Y, Z, Q that I don't agree with, that's just not something that we're doing. And we did a really long and wonderful, I would say, because we're awesome, episode on this in the run-up to the election in November, and how around elections in particular, we're not endorsing candidates or any of those sort of things. But even more broadly speaking, in this era of very serious divided political beliefs and social beliefs, that we are not breeding grounds for ideologically indoctrinating your kids into any one thing or any other thing. And you can insert your thing you don't want us to teach here. That's not what we're doing. We're math and humanities and debate and other sorts of content teachers, but not those other things. Is that accurate around the horn here, Natalie and Matthew?
I would agree. I think that's a real misperception that has been part of the strategic plan for people who are promoting vouchers and ESAs up to this point, is to full out attack public education in their efforts to generate support for the vouchers. And I think that has done a greater disservice to schools, because now we are on defense just in, validating our purpose and our, you know, vision and mission as public educators to empower and inform students and parents and families with information.
I've been teaching for over 14 years now. I've been in, you know, innumerable classrooms. I've never once experienced a teacher who has been sort of like trying to disseminate biased information that, you know, the public is concerned, it, you know, constitutes as indoctrination of our children, right? In terms of politics, in terms of religion, in terms of identity, in terms of sexuality. I've never encountered that in my 15 years in the classroom. And I have not come across any substantiated evidence that exists. And I teach speech and debate. I research a lot of different topics, including this one. And it's just, it's not accurate. I mean, maybe you could make the argument that teachers, as people tend to be on the more liberal side of things. I don't even know if that's accurate necessarily, but that's certainly not something that they're sharing with their students. And I also think that there's a little bit of irony here. And the push for the vouchers, the push for the ESAs is essentially a push for these private schools, for the most part, especially in Texas, are religious schools.
No, not for nothing. If you're looking for ideological indoctrination, you will find it in the Catholic schools or in the religious schools or in the schools that require students to, you know, do their prayers every day or any of those sorts of things, which, again, is great for a lot of people and what many are looking for, right? But that is not happening in the public school.
Right. And if we're paying attention at the same time that a lot of the big news headlines are distracting us, another piece of legislation that is on the block somewhere, and I don't remember the bill number to know how far, you know, how high up on the priority list it is, but I do know that there's already been discussion about making it mandatory to start posting things like the Ten Commandments in the public school, which I would argue is a step toward indoctrination. Now, it's a step that would be mandated to us by the powers that be and not a step of indoctrination that the school system itself is promoting. And it's unfortunate that in the process of questioning the integrity of our public schools and what we're doing as educators in the public school system is really a disservice, because if we zoom out a little bit and we look at what's actually happening and not happening and then what they're proposing to happen, it feels like the state is trying to bring the indoctrination into the schools with this focus on Christian ideology in particular. There is no mention or mandate around posting the tenets of any of the other major world religions in, so far as I know, with regard to those discussions. So it's unfortunate because it puts us in a position as educators, as public schools, to defend ourselves against the very thing that we're being accused of, and that we then also are potentially going to be required to do, just through a different, from a different angle than what has been accused. I don't know. That's a lot.
And that was actually a pair of Senate bills that came out of the chamber here early in March. And again, I don't have those numbers as well, but it's definitely something that we're on the road towards. So kind of moving into our conclusion here, what is the value of public schools? That's what we really want to talk about on this podcast, specifically why we deserve to continue to receive critical funding. As we've all been mentioning on this podcast, the mandate of public education is one of the bedrocks of the United States of America. That mandate has not changed, even in the midst of technological advancements, globalization, a global pandemic. Public schools have always and continue to accept everyone and provide all kids with an education, no matter their background, no matter what their race is, their gender, their sexual orientation, their special education classification, ethnicity, economic status, language barrier, any other demographic you can name, we bring them in. Public education and sustaining a great future for our country go hand in hand. They are one and the same, because the continued greatness of our project here, our democracy, depends on the free flow of information that is encouraged in the public school classroom. We do teach kids math and reading, but we don't just do that. We mold them using the USA's historic values of citizenship and respect for others. We expose them to people who might not look or sound like them, nor possess the same background. And these ideas of diversity and inclusion, which sadly are becoming naughty words in our country, actually, research supports tangibly improve outcomes for all students, not just the marginalized, but all students benefit from more diversity in the classroom. So vouchers, as Matthew has been speaking very eloquently about, represent only the illusion of school choice and actually are the antithesis of progress towards what's going to continue to make our country great.
The illusion of school choice, I think, is really strong here, and a force of segregation. I've said this before, I think, on this podcast. But I really stand by this. I think that the fundamental idea of public education is to facilitate social mobility and to act as the great equalizer, right? That's the basic idea or ideal of public education. And sure, that's a dream. That's not necessarily a reality. Our public schools are segregated. But my concern about this idea of quote unquote school choice or, you know, opportunities for parents is that it's not going to serve as a way of facilitating greater social mobility and equality. That in fact, it's going to do the opposite. And if you want evidence on that, just look at the states that have already put forth these ESA programs or these voucher programs. Right. The vast majority of, I hate to say it, and it may not be the intention of the legislators, and I don't think that it necessarily is, but the vast majority of people who receive these ESAs or these school vouchers are the already rich. And I just, and that's unfortunate, but that is the reality. And I am skeptical of this in Texas. And there are some interesting and positive things within the bill that the Senate passed. I worry that it's going to oppose the very basic fundamental ideals of public education in America.
We are once again grappling with being tasked with doing more with less, right? Mm-hmm. Do more with less funding. It is a historical challenge that public schools have faced. As you mentioned, Lance, in the beginning with some of the numbers that you shared with regard to the basic allotment, from what I have seen in the legislative text that is looking to be passed, it sounds like that basic allotment per student only stands to increase about $200. So we found $1 billion to serve a handful of the state students.
Less than 2%.
And aside from the fact that it feels like that could have been appropriated in a different way to serve a greater number of Texans and Texas students, at this point, what's happening is happening, and public schools are going to continue to do everything that we can to empower and inform our students. We are going to continue to serve in that way. It is not right for us to be martyrs to the political implications that happen when funding is kind of being tossed back and forth in the way that it has. But regardless, we as public educators and as public institutions are going to continue to afford every opportunity that we can to give our students access to learning, exposure to opportunities, and resources to support their various diverse needs. And we're not just talking about our students, we're talking about the families of our students as well. And when I say resources, I don't necessarily mean public resources that are also being paid for by tax dollars, but I'm simply talking about parenting guides and supporting our grandparents who are raising their grandchildren and the divide between that generational gap. Supporting students that don't have the same kind of access to technology at home that they do at school, and providing them with resources to give them the same opportunity and access to their learning. We're going to continue to provide tutoring and learning disability testing and screening for a number of different things that may otherwise not be identified if the public school didn't provide that, and we have families and students that couldn't otherwise access those services. We are going to continue to do it because it's what we're here to do. I would really like to see, as we move forward, the state support that cause and invest in that cause. And we can maybe devote a whole other episode to the realities, the challenging realities that these vouchers and the changes in funding are going to create. But what I hope to leave our listeners with today is the confidence in public schools and in public school teachers that we are going to continue to operate with integrity, regardless of the way that we have been attacked or the stories that have been painted in recent years. And we are going to continue to do right by our students and by our professional colleagues.
Well said to both of you. And in closing, I'm a broken record at this point, but this continued implementation of our noble public education project still costs money, right? We must debunk this public opinion that public schools are failing, and instead, as we've tried to do here, celebrate the inherent greatness that they provide to our students and our communities. Let's, all of us, our listeners and the three of us, collectively stop denigrating this hallowed and storied institution of public education, which, as Natalie just mentioned, can only do so much with so little. And let's encourage our state representatives to fund them commensurate with their value. Look, all three of us are parents as well as educators, and we recognize that some narratives can be a never-ending or even vicious cycle, especially in this era of polarization. But as we systematically siphon away what little funding is already going to these great schools that serve, as we mentioned, the majority, the vast majority of Texas students, that will mean fewer conferences for us to attend, fewer exciting new teaching methods that we can pay for and adopt, honestly, less field trips, less access to innovative technologies for students to interface with, and even harder to obtain basic supplies. So ultimately, we will run the risk of ushering in the exact failure that the narrative presupposes. So we'll leave y'all there. So until next time, thanks for listening to All Things Education with Lance, Natalie, and Matthew. Please follow us on IG. That's Instagram for the older people in our audience. All Things Education Podcast. And send us a voice note with your thoughts. We love to hear from you, and we would love to feature your voice on an upcoming episode. Matthew and Natalie, it's been great.
Thank you for listening to All Things Education.
Be sure to leave us a review and share the show with everyone you know.
If you liked what you heard, stay tuned for more compelling conversations with Natalie, Matthew, and Lance.
Until next time, Texas.